from deep inside your radio.
I'm still thinking about the new slogan for the Hollywood Bowl. There's a story in every seat. You could have done better, is all I can say. From, obviously, the legacy LeShowdom, ladies and gentlemen, it's become news this week everywhere that Joe Paterno, in an example of paternalism, knew about Jerry Sandusky's little thing, little peccadillos, we're supposed to call them that, and clammed up about it. But there's a deeper story that the journalism website Pointer.org investigates this week. In 2007, the president of Penn State, Graham Spanier, testified before the Pennsylvania State Legislature years after emails flew between top school officials about the sexual abuse allegations involving Sandusky. Spanier, in 2007, pleaded with state lawmakers to exempt certain universities, Temple and Penn State, from the state's open records laws. Subjecting Penn State to right-to-know does far more than feed the prurient interest of newspaper editors who are looking for a headline about how much Joe Paterno makes, Spanier testified. He is, by the way, one of the school leaders most sharply rebuked in this week's report by the Louis Free-led investigation. Spanier warned lawmakers at the time that if his school had to disclose its files, like those emails, to the public, it could lose lucrative partnerships with vendors like Nike and Pepsi, which require non-disclosure. See where this is going? Spanier said revenue from intellectual property would fall because bidders would know too much. He said donors to the school want to remain anonymous. That's why they put their names on buildings. And that the disclosures would lead to an erosion of privacy rights for the people who are mentioned in the files. There was a Spanier in the works. Ladies and gentlemen, we are not number one. In 2001, an organization called Transparency International, which has a corruption perceptions index, ranked the United States as the 16th least corrupt country in the world. By last year, the United States had fallen to 24th place. We're 24. The World Bank reports a weakening of corruption controls in the United States since the late 1990s. It's falling behind most other developed nations. But, you know, you got to break some eggs to have some broken eggs. And if you're wondering why we might be 24th, a quarter of Wall Street executives see wrongdoing as a key to success, according to a survey by the whistleblower law firm Labaton Sucuro, released this week, that made the news. In a survey of 500 senior executives in the United States and the U.K., 26% said they had observed or had firsthand knowledge of wrongdoing in the workplace. 24% said they believed financial services professionals may need to engage in unethical or illegal conduct to be successful. 30% said their compensation plans created pressure to compromise ethical standards or violate the law. But we're number 24. And if you don't think I'm busting my buttons, you don't know my buttons. But, you know, it's only 2 weeks away. It's only 2 weeks to the opening ceremonies. There's got to be a lot of news of the Olympic movement. Thanks, guys, for not resetting the speed back to normal. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. Yes, the monkeys are loose in the Legacy LeShowdom. Inexperienced new recruits deployed to shorten queues are repeatedly missing passengers who may need to be referred to counterterrorism officers. This is at Heathrow Airport in London. The terror suspects are entering the UK in the run-up to the Olympics without the necessary security checks, according to frontline officials at Heathrow. One senior border officer told the Observer newspaper that inexperienced new recruits are repeatedly missing passengers of interest. The official said he was personally aware of the three terrorist suspects, all of whose names are registered on the Home Office's suspect index system, had been waved through by staff on his shifts since the start of this month. "It's all new faces," said the senior official. "The rest of the staff, I have no idea where they come from, how long they're here for, what their background is. These are people who've been forced by their own department to come here." He also does commercials for Geico. This crisis comes days after G4S, the world's biggest security firm, announced it could not provide enough security guards for the London Olympics, forcing the government to call up 3,500 troops to meet the shortfall. The Intelligence and Security Committee of the Parliament warned that the Olympics had diverted MI5, MI6, and other security forces from other potential threats to Britain, citing, quote, the vulnerability of the UK at this critical period. A UK border agency official speaking on condition of anonymity said, "How many other misses have occurred? The missing of counterterrorism hits is a huge thing, but new recruits are not getting enough time to be taught." But wait, there's so much more, and in so many fewer bad accents. In the official terms of use for the London 2012 website, the free speech blog found a linking policy. Quote, links to the Olympic website. You may create your own, this is for the athletes. You may create your own link to the site, provided that your link is in a text-only format. You may not use any link to the site as a method of creating an unauthorized association between an organization, business, goods, or services in London 2012. And you agree that no such link, shall portray us or any other official London 2012 organization or our activities, products, or services in a false, misleading, derogatory, or otherwise objectionable manner. More on the security threat. The depth of the crisis over the G4S security preparations became increasingly clear as recruits revealed details of a totally chaotic selection process, and police joined the military in bracing themselves to fill the void. Guards told how, with 14 days to go until the Olympics opening ceremony, they had received no schedules, uniforms, or training on X-ray machines. Others said they'd been allocated to venues hundreds of miles from where they lived, been sent rotations intended for other employees, and offered shifts after they had failed G4S's own vetting. G4S sent an urgent request on Thursday to retired police, asking them to help. Another G4S trainee, an ex-policeman, described the process as an utter farce. He added there were people who couldn't spell their own name. The staff were having to help them. Most people hadn't filled in their applications form correctly. Some didn't know what references were. Others said they didn't have anyone who could act as a referee. Reference. The G4S people were having to prompt them, saying things like, "What about your uncle?" Tom Stewart, a former prison officer, said he was recruited by G4S, but he wouldn't be working at the Games because of a series of blunders. He provided documentation for vetting, but G4S said it didn't have the information on record, and so closed his file. The security firm then offered him a training session at short notice, which he could not attend, but it did not offer an alternative. Oh, there's more. Stick around. Dateline Philadelphia, a Greek gyro vendor in the Reading Terminal Market, says he is being forced by the U.S. Olympic Committee to change the name of his business, Olympic Gyro, a name the business has used for three decades. Claiming copyright of the word Olympic, the U.S. Olympic Committee has told gyro stand owner Athens Voulgardis that he must change the name of the stand, even though it's had its name since 1982. Voulgardis' family bought the operation in 1984, and he's worked there since age 12. "It comes down to money," he says philosophically. "It comes down to owning a word that will bring money to the USOC." The great London 2012 Olympic French fry embargo has cracked. No longer will hungry workers at the Games be denied pie and chips, as it's called. Chicken and chips, or even just chips, because of the monopoly enforced by McDonald's, a major sponsor. On Wednesday, the London Organizing Committee responded to plaintive cries of caterers who had grown tired of receiving grief from chip-hungry staff working on the opening and closing ceremonies, and allowed chips to be served outside branches of the fast food chain McDonald's only for those working on the ceremonies, patrons will still have to get their chips from Mickey D's. Back to the security screw-up, Nick Buckles. You couldn't write it. Nick Buckles, chief executive of G4S, says he deeply regrets the company's failure to recruit enough staff. He said attempts to recruit 10,000 workers had been complex, and that the firm had underestimated the scale of the task. When challenged about whether those recruited by G4S even spoke fluent English, Buckles struggled to answer the question. He told BBC Radio 4's Today program, "That's a difficult question to answer. They all have a right to work in the UK and have been vetted to very high standards." When the question was repeated, he admitted, "I can't say categorically." He said it in English. He was asked the question in a later interview on Sky News. "As part of the security industry authority training and as part of the SIA certification, you have to be able to speak English. That's the standard for the UK security industry." So he'd been briefed by them. He said the shambles will cost his firm between $70 and $100 million, including a fine for its failure to deliver on the contract. The rest of the costs will be paid to the military for drafting in the thousands of soldiers to man security at the Olympics. He said his company only realized something had gone wrong 8 or 9 days ago, when it became clear that the number of successful applicants in the recruitment process were not high enough. Lord Coe, the chairman of the Olympic Organizing Committee, says it's not possible to rule out even more military personnel having to be deployed. And in a further blow, more police may now be called in to provide security. Scotland Yard commanders were said to be seething after losing confidence in G4S and feel they now are having to pick up the pieces. And the final word comes from Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks. "If you look up stupid in the dictionary, you see a picture of the USA Dream Team playing for free for corporate America so the U.S. Olympic Committee can make billions of dollars. And it has nothing to do with patriotism. It's all about money. You don't see the International Olympic Committee saying, 'Oh, we made so much money, let's give it to people.' How many jets do they have? The Olympics, it's a movement, and we all need one. Every day." Hello, welcome to the show. You think you know. You've had the best, the rest won't do. And when it's all over for you. And when you ask yourself just what went wrong, is the time to sing just one more love song. Cry, cry, cry till you're misunderstood. Dry your eyes like it does any. Taught the world to cry. You taught the world to cry. You think you're the one that taught the world to cry. Sometimes you're
Sometimes you pinch yourself just to see if it's real. Sometimes you choke yourself just to see how it feels. And when you ask yourself the reason why, you think you're the one. You think you're the one. Yeah, you think you're the one. The thought the world would cry. You think you're the one. The thought the world would cry. You taught the world.
In the middle of the desert.
We are in the middle of the desert.
Spike and Rachel, we are near the ocean, but the sand is probably what's confusing you. From the home of the homeless, the edge of America, the home of the Rubber Promise, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show, News of the Digital Wonderland. Alan Burns and Associates have released more results from the company's third annual national study of female radio listeners. Like to get that work. The data shows that awareness and trying sampling of HD radio have not improved in the past year among women. While HD radio's awareness is flat year to year, there's slightly improved understanding. More women knew that HD does not require users to pay a monthly fee and offers additional programming. However, HD has a long way to go if it's going to have an impact on the industry. I'll say, I've said. Burns also says the data suggests there might be a reason for stations to discontinue the common practice of including HD in their station identifications. Dig this. Quote, when we ask women if they've ever listened to HD radio, just under 4% say yes. But when the question is asked, has ever listened to an HD station or channel, the number nearly triples. One way to interpret that is that women think they're listening to HD radio when they hear a regular FM station say HD. If so, there's a huge potential negative there. These women hear what they think is HD, and since it sounds no different, may conclude it offers them no benefit. We'd probably be better off not using HD in the station identifications, which stations have been doing now for, 3 years, desperately trying to get you to buy that stuff. And let us try. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers motto, and they do keep trying. Don't have time for the theme today, but Dateline New Orleans, an Army Corps of Engineers report issued this week confirmed that debris was buried in a levee built after the flood in 2005. But the agency said the debris, which included many bits of wood and pieces of concrete, plastic pipe, and metal, doesn't pose a danger to the stability of the levee. NOLA.com comes in with more detail on the what was found there. A crushed shopping cart, tires, hubcaps, and a water heater in your levee, ladies and gentlemen. But that's fine, according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The levee protects residents on the West Bank, which is due east of downtown New Orleans. Go figure. The area did not flood then in 2005. But the Corps is spending about $2 billion on new flood protection for the West Bank. Those used shopping carts do not come cheap, ladies and gentlemen. Last year, the Corps convened a so-called tiger team of specialists after the local levee board complained about finding debris in the levees. Local inspectors found that stuff we talked about. But now the Corps says the levee work is satisfactory. It meets all the design intents, says Patrick Conroy, a Corps soils expert and tiger team leader. It will provide the necessary public safety that it was designed to do. That's what they said about the hurricane protection system that failed in 2005, just for, background information. The West Bank Levee Board is worried that the levees the Corps has built may not withstand powerful hurricanes. They may settle and slump over time because of the debris, and they are unsatisfied by the new Corps report. Michael Merritt, a commissioner of the levee board and a geologist, call it a disappointing and failed Tiger Team investigation. he also served on the Tiger team, objected to many of its findings. Woody debris, some of it longer than 12 inches in length, pieces of concrete, stone, corrugated metal pipe. Debris inside the new levee could have also come from the old levee. In building it, the new one, contractors dug up an existing levee and used dirt from that one. But the Corps insists the debris falls within its specifications. But the Corps report recommended taking more steps to make sure debris doesn't end up in future levee projects. Why, that's like a bad thing? It's not desirable to have debris of this kind, the Corps spokesman said. But it's okay. But it's not desirable. But it's okay. But it's not desirable. The team did find one potentially more serious problem in the levee. The report advises that the Corps do more testing on a section of new levee near an old dump. The report said there was a buried debris field in that area that needs to be investigated. The Corps might find it necessary to shore up that portion of the levee. Corps officials in Washington have already agreed to bring in another team, this one made up of independent experts. That's novel. Let us try anything. Even independent experts. The Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen, working on your dime. Billions, sorry. And now, billions of dimes.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Our friend Addy the Atom is here for news of our friend the Atom.
Yeah, the sand confused me, too. I thought we were in the desert.
Wow. You, Rachel, and Spike. TVA's Browns Ferry nuclear plant near Athens, Alabama, would that be right, had a fire in one of its control rooms in January. But public notice of the event was not issued until this week, according to the Huntsville Times, which I believe is one of those papers that's going to be publishing only 3 days a week if Newhouse Publications, Advanced Publications owned by Newhouse, has their way. The roughly 10-minute fire in the Unit 3 control room was caused by an electrical component determined to be about 34 years old, four times older than its recommended shelf life, according to the TVA's own incident report. Its report was submitted 2 months after the fire. An NRC spokesman said he had no explanation why the report was not made public by the NRC until July 9th. The fire reportedly caused by a failed power supply in a panel. It burned out some plant alarms. Nice. And warning lights. That's what happens when you lose power. TVA determined the fire did not affect safety systems. It did not last long enough to warrant immediate reporting to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
What's your hurry?
I don't know. An NRC inspector at the plant responded to the control room shortly after the fire, but there were conflicting versions of what happened. He was told there was no fire, no damage to any adjacent equipment, said NRC spokesperson. He asked all the typical questions and determined it had been a minor problem. The report in March was the first time the NRC heard there had been an actual fire. The NRC is still reviewing the incident. Nothing to hide here. With the outage at San Onofre in Southern California approaching the six-month mark, federal safety regulators this week released hundreds of detailed figures on the extent and location of damage to steel generator tubing that protects against radiation releases. That's all the tubes do. Tubes within the plant's four generators contain superheated water. Replacement generators have shown unprecedented thinning of the nickel alloy tubing after just 1 year in service at Unit 3 and 2 years at Unit 1. Tubes have to be retired if 35% of the wall thickness wears away. Damage surpassed that threshold in 981 spots on 531 tubes, virtually all in one reactor. The Unit 2 reactor also showed thousands of points of wear, less extensive damage. Figures were released in response to repeated requests for more detailed information by the public. The public. What does the public know?
My sentiments exactly.
We agree. They are the most troublesome in the country, these San Onofre generators. Tube damage is more extensive than Southern California Edison had admitted publicly. It has repaired four times as many tubes as the combined total of repair tubes at all other U.S. nuclear power plants.
We're number one.
That's right. A report commissioned by Friends of the Earth finds that San Onofre has repaired 1,300 generator tubes, four times as many as the combined total of required repaired tubes at all other nuclear plants. So that figure comes from Friends of the Earth. A sapphire hard disk can last 1 million years and resolve a problem worrying archaeologists. Patrick Charton of the French nuclear waste management agency ANDRA presented a way out of data storage problems, an information-engraved sapphire disk using platinum. It's being called the ultimate HDD. Not like HD radio gals, don't worry. The disk was announced at this week's Euroscience Open Forum. The solution is in the form of anyway. With the sapphire disk, up to 40,000 miniaturized pages of text or images can be inscribed in the platinum. The information would be read with microscopes. A key application would be as a solution for how future societies will be able to identify areas of buried nuclear waste with a microscope. Of course. Nuclear reactors produce about, once it's supposed to be, you know this story. Waste has to be buried and left alone for, a few hundred thousand years. While designers of such repositories are confident the waste can be buried safely, the fear is that future archaeologists may dig in the wrong places. Markers would be a way to allow them to know where they should not dig. With a sapphire disk, the warning message could be encoded into various forms of written human communication, including words, pictograms, and diagrams. Linguists and artists are involved in the project. The researchers say, thus far, they have no idea what language to use. We got the disk. We just don't know what to put in it.
It's a good disk.
It's a good disk. You do look on the bright side, don't you, Eddie?
Well, that's my spin. My nucleus spins that way.
Good. Decaying concrete at nuclear power plants is the latest concern for Canadian nuclear safety authorities. At Quebec's Seoul Atomic Power Station, eroding concrete has prompted federal licensing officials to suggest that any provincial attempt to refurbish and relicense the 30-year-old plant must satisfy federal concerns over the aging concrete's ability to stand up to another two or three decades of service. Economic pressures are forcing nuclear utilities to consider refurbishing their nuclear plants and operating them well past their 25 to 30-year initial lifespans. Aging concrete.
Botox for concrete.
Nice idea. Now, you know that there was an official report released last week about Fuk. More than a year after the devastating nuclear accident, we still don't have an answer. One of the most crucial questions was the accident triggered entirely by the tsunami, or did the prior earthquake begin the chain of mechanical failures? That investigation by a Japanese government panel, according to the IEEE Spectrum, includes tentative evidence that the earthquake did indeed play a larger role than previously admitted. After 6 months of questioning, 900 hours of hearings, interviews with 1,100 people, the Independent Investigation Committee appointed by Japan's parliament emphasizes collusion between the plant operator and government regulators, characterizes the accident as man-made, and the tragedy was made in Japan, a direct result of the Japanese reluctance to question authority. We don't have any of that. The report says the disaster could and should have been foreseen, but wasn't due to the cozy relationship between the government ministry that promoted nuclear power, the plant operator, TEPCO, and the country's two regulatory agencies. This uneasy, unhealthy intimacy made it easy for TEPCO to put off implementing new safety regulations that would have interfered with plant operations and weakened its stance in potential lawsuits. For example, when the regulator set a 2009 deadline to implement new anti-seismic structural reinforcements for Fuk's reactor units, TEPCO unilaterally rescheduled the deadline to January 2016. Consequently, no reinforcements had been added by the time of the 2011 accident. The report says that regulators failed in the oversight of TEPCO's progress. These led the board to believe there is a possibility that the earthquake itself damaged important equipment. That was a fact long disputed by TEPCO and the regulators. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter can't be determined with certainty until the reactor buildings can be entered. At the moment, they're far too radioactive for study.
I could go in there.
Yes, you could. Further details emerged this week about the conditions faced by workers in the aftermath of the Fuk incidents. And TEPCO may pay $12.5 billion for first efforts to clean up contamination in the surrounding countryside. Quoting anonymous sources, the Asahi Shimbun newspaper reported the Japanese government was preparing to charge TEPCO that much money in addition to the $31 billion in compensation to nearby residents. Of course, TEPCO has been nationalized by the Japanese government, so that's going to be taxpayer or ratepayer money now. In a survey of plant workers included in the report, only 47% of TEPCO employees said they were informed of the danger the damaged reactors posed early in the crisis. Among contractors, 95% said they were not briefed. The report faulted a number of TEPCO responses to the crisis, with plant preparedness for emergencies among them.
But emergencies so rarely happen.
That is true. That is so true, Addie. And America's first nuclear plants in more than a decade are costing billions more to build, sometimes taking longer to deliver than planned, problems that could chill the industry's hopes for a jump start. Licensing delay charges, soaring construction expenses, and installation glitches as mundane as misshapen metal bars have driven up the costs of three plants in Georgia, Tennessee, and South Carolina from hundreds of millions to as much as $2 billion, according to the Associated Press. And the public shouldn't expect environmental cleanup along the Columbia River at Hanford to be entirely completed by its 2005 deadline, said Hanford regulators. DOE is considering extending it if the work hasn't been completed. There's been the discovery of additional contamination as cleanup has progressed. It'll require more work and has increased the cost. It's a big bite of the cleanup apple, but it will not consume the apple, says Larry Gadbois of the EPA. By the way, reminiscent of a comment by an official of an apple company trying to get genetically modified apples approved so that they will not brown, so the company can sell more sliced apples without the danger of the browning, because he said for a lot of consumers, a whole apple is a big commitment. News, clean, cheap, safe, too clean to think, too clean to be an apple. Our friend the Atom, ladies and gentlemen, you know that the political campaign is in full swing. An entire week has been spent on whether Mitt Romney was titular head of Bain or actually in control. A interesting line of attack for an administration that insists when torture is involved, oh, we can't be looking backwards. We got to look forward. Mitt Romney, meanwhile, was among his stops this week was Dick Cheney's place in Wyoming for a big, and I do mean big with $2 signs, fundraiser. For more information on that, we may have to go subterranean next here on the show.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground former vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who used to be just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, confidential, 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 confidential.
It's been a busy little springtime when you stop to think about it. New pills, new stents, new shunts, new ways of tricking the old ticker into giving me a few thousand more ticks. Not because I have that much more left to accomplish. Just to tick off my enemies. And if you think Lynn's normal cooking was good, and it wasn't, you should taste the stuff she's whipping up to be heart healthy. It would make a food industry lobbyist yodel a rainbow. Meanwhile, spare a dad a proud moment or two. My non-lesbian daughter Liz is well on her way to being, well, to call her the poor man's Ann Coulter would be cruel. But to call her the blind man's Ann Coulter would be cruel, too. So forget about a dad's pride. Here at the secure, undisclosed Wyoming, the fish were biting and the elk were screaming bloody murder. No, dear diary, I haven't shot anybody in the face this hunting season. Yet. Someone who didn't know me better might think it was a time of mellowing contemplation for me. But they'd be wronger than a starlet at fat camp. Something was happening inside that grand old party of mine. An unstiffening of spine, a rollback of robustness, an enhanced lack of enhancement, you might call it. And though it might cost me 1,000 ticks on the old meter, I had to suit up one more time. Not in a suit. This was Wyoming. But I hosted a fundraiser for the party's presumptive presidential candidate. just so I could make sure he wasn't presuming too much. Thursday, 5:17 p.m.
Great spread you've got here, Mr. Vice President.
Yeah. It's 100% canola oil, but it tastes just like margarine.
I was referring to the real estate. Nice little parcel.
Well, I had to park the Halliburton payout somewhere. Uh-huh. Stocks were crap. I don't like art, so...
And it's a great crowd we've got here. Real cross-section. Everybody from billionaires to multimillionaires.
Yes, sir. It's the cream and the crop. Uh-huh. Hey, listen, pal, before they ring the dinner bell, mm-hmm. let me show you one of the standout features of this mega ranchito.
Hey, it's dark in here.
And deep. Welcome to my little meditation chamber.
Oh, I didn't know you meditate, Dick.
I don't. You do.
Oh, no, sir. We pray just like normal Christians do.
Listen, Smiley. All the good hair in the world isn't going to save you now. We've got some straight talk to be doing, and I'm going to be doing it. After which comes your little meditation.
Ha, 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 Dick. You're kind of playing into your negative stereotype here.
And you've got the lamest laugh this side of Woody Woodpecker. Where'd you learn to laugh like that?
Business school.
Okay, my friend. You see, we made a little rain here tonight.
$6 million worth. That's a nice little evening's work.
More than you expected, right, pal?
I have to say, we're pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm. That's because these are my people. They paid to meet you, and to support you, and to face you with some realities.
Well, sure, glad to answer any...
Okay, let's start off the questioning with Mr. Cheney.
Fine.
What's your vision for the world?
You mean aside from it becoming Mormon?
Yeah, aside from that.
Well, stability, freedom, new respect for America, all that good stuff.
Geez, a minute more of that, I was going to ask you to start laughing again.
No problem.
No, there is a problem.
I look like a Ming.
Cheap imitation. Mm. Listen, my friend, it's a bad old world out there. We either take robust steps to remake it in our desired image, or we start accommodating ourselves to the wishes of folks with strangely shaped eyes and odd names for God.
Not good.
No, sir. Now, there's a couple of countries in the Middle East. I won't insult you by calling them dominoes, but let's just say they're tenpins. Mm-hmm. Syria and Iran get toppled, and the United States effectively owns the lane for the next little while.
Well, Syria is a complicated mixture of ethnicities, but one thing I will not do is apologize for America.
That's nice. I bet you won't pee on the dinner dishes either.
I mean, no, I won't. Mm-hmm. But, Dick, I do have a great foreign policy team advising me, the great Brent Scowcroft.
Listen, my friend, if you want your wife to leave here tonight without fending off a horrifying attack from an angry moose, then I suggest you put all thoughts of taking advice from the so-called realist wing of our party right out of your mind.
Well, for goodness sake, what's wrong with a little realism for a change?
My friend, when you're in a secure, undisclosed underground bunker with only 4 hours of oxygen, and me the only person who knows the exit code, it's a little late for realism.
Earth to Dick Cheney, I'm a pretty fit individual. The minute you open that hatch, I could overpower you.
Relax, my friend. You've seen too many movies. I was just giving you a scenario. What you just showed me right there is what we want you to show the Syrians and the Iranians.
Well, of course, my team and I will give it the most serious consideration.
Look, pal, our Iraq project left a few loose strings dangling. Your vision for the world could be neatly described as Operation Loose Strings. And if you disagree, I'm sure some folks here tonight could make it stop raining awful propitiously.
Well, you know what? I am going to take you up on that meditation offer.
Good thing. We don't want to keep that very expensive bad food waiting. I wasn't born yesterday. I didn't just get off the Southwest flight from Fresno. It'll take more than one scary conversation in the presence of heavy-duty donors to turn laughing boy. Fortunately, I've got all year. And a partial diary for early July 2012. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney.
Confidential. Confidential. Confidential.
Oh, that's the wrong music.
That is so the wrong music. Everybody in the world knows that.
That music comes later. Here's the music that comes now. News from outside the bubble. Fortunately, there's no accountability anywhere. From this is the latest, ladies and gentlemen, on the LIBOR scandal. You haven't heard much about that lately because they've been arguing about Bain this week in this country. But from outside the bubble, The Independent reports that regulators on both sides of the Atlantic failed to act on clear warnings that the key international interest rate was being falsely reported by banks during the financial crisis. A cache of documents released by the New York Federal Reserve showed that U.S. officials had evidence from April 2008 that Barclays was knowingly posting false reports about the rate at which it could borrow in order to assuage market concerns about its solvency. An unnamed Barclays official told the New York Fed employee on April 11th, "So we know that we're not posting an honest LIBOR." He said Barclays started underreporting LIBOR because graphs showing the relatively high rates at which the bank had to borrow attracted, quote, unwanted attention, and the share price went down. The verbatim note of the call released by the Fed represents the starkest evidence yet that LIBOR fiddling was discussed in high regulatory circles years before Barclays' recent multi-hundred-million-dollar fine. Tim Geithner investigated and drew up a six-point proposal after he was alerted to that call, a proposal for ensuring the integrity of LIBOR, which he presented to the British Bankers Association. He forwarded it to the governor of the Bank of England as well. The bank pointed out this week there was no evidence in the Geithner letter of banks actually making false submissions. It was unclear whether Geithner informed the head of the bank about the testimony of the Barclays employee. That would be highly damaging for the bank if he did, since it has always claimed it never saw or heard any evidence that private banks were deliberately making false reports about their borrowing costs. And, of course, Tim Geithner has been on this ever since. Oh, sorry, that was a Woody Woodpecker kind of. And from Sky News, in a memo sent to staff this week and leaked exclusively to Sky News, the nine members of Barclays Bank's executive committee warned that the LIBOR crisis should not distract them from the core task of safeguarding Barclays' balance sheet. The macro environment remains febrile. Only British bankers would say that. I do believe. I think that's fair to say. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit. But it also says this: as other banks settle with authorities and their details become public and various governments' inquiries shed more light, our situation, Barclays, will eventually be put into perspective. That's a hint that rival banks are likely to be hit with even bigger fines. Approximately 15 other lenders are under investigation by authorities probing that crisis. The LIBOR crisis, ladies and gentlemen, keep an eye on it, or I will for you. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, in an interview with CBS this week, President Obama revealed that he'd figured out where his groove has gone.
The mistake of my first couple of years was thinking that this job was just about getting the policy right. And that's important. But, you know, the nature of this office is also to tell a story to the American people that gives them a sense of unity and purpose and optimism, especially during tough times.
And we may hear an example of that coming up moments from now here on the show. In fact, we will. Something.
From CPR Continental Public Radio, the President's Weekly Address. And now, from his weekly address, the President.
You've earned it. You need it. It's story time. Today, the story of the three wise men and the magic land. Once upon a time, in a place and time very much like our own, except without Fox News, there was a wise leader who had inherited a lot of bad things. Oh, he inherited some good things, too, like the power to detain citizens indefinitely. But that's another story. Literally. But it was a time when everyone was afraid that there wouldn't be any more money. So that wise leader sought out the smartest men about money. They were named Larry and Timmy and Bernanke. As it happened, all of them had had something to do with there possibly not being any more money. So the wise leader knew that if anyone was going to figure out how to fix that problem, it was them. They saw that the banks were weak, And without the banks, there couldn't be any money. They knew that if they helped the people, but not the banks, the people couldn't help the banks recover. But if they helped the banks and not the people, then the banks could help the people recover. It was a fine plan by three very wise men, and it may yet work out. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, there was a magical place. It was magical because many other countries had gone there and been forced to leave. But the wise leader knew that it was important to stay there to defeat the worldwide evil that was now headquartered in two much less magical places. And so he called in the special airplanes, the drones, and the reapers. And oh, they droned. And also did they reap. And even the bad people next door in the country which was our good friend, but not really, some of them got reaped too. And in the magical place, more girls went to school, and more poppies bloomed, and many of the leaders acquired fine new properties in Dubai, which was out of range of their enemies. But soon, with the residents of the magical place and the people of his own land joining in to ask for an end to the fighting in that land far away, the wise leader, after much thinking and consulting with defense intellectuals, came to a realization. He finally understood why this place was so magical. He realized it was a land from which you could withdraw all of your soldiers, and yet from which you could never, ever leave. And nothing is more magical than that. Well, enough stories for today. Next week I'll have a story about helping people keep their homes by not preventing fraudulent foreclosures. That's kind of magical, too. So I'll talk to you then. And in the meantime, through my aggressive circuits, have a great weekend.
Funds for this broadcast came from the Public Radio What Did We Do With the Other Funds Fund. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And first up, the governor of Maine, Governor Paul LePage.
Many governors are now contesting Obamacare. What happened last week as a result of my radio address was intended to shed more light on the tenuous situation Maine is facing. Instead, one word halted the conversation and spurred a flurry of unintended consequences. The acts of the Holocaust were nothing short of horrific. Millions of innocent people were murdered, and I apologize for my insensitivity to the word and the offense some took to my comparison of the IRS and the Gestapo.
Okay. The governor of Maine, ladies and gentlemen. Deadline Seoul, the top United States military commander in South Korea, apologized this week for an episode during which American military police officers handcuffed three South Koreans in a dispute over a parking violation, inciting protests from civic groups. Air Canada lost track of a 12-year-old after a mother paid the company $100 to escort her daughter from the plane to a waiting relative. The girl ended up wandering the airport terminal for 25 minutes before locating her relative using her cell phone. Air Canada has apologized and offered to reimburse the mother the money she paid for the botched child supervision. But it was only $100 Canadian. The mayor of Las Cruces, New Mexico, was apologized after a Tea Party folk bearing a Confederate flag won top prize in a recent city parade. Mayor Ken Miyagishima wrote in an email he was caught by surprise when the float won Best of Show in the Electric Light Parade. It was all more disturbing when that Confederate flag represents a view so contrary to that held by the city of Las Cruces and 99% of our people, he wrote. To have this symbol and what it represents highlight the winning float as a celebration of our nation's independence is an outrage. I deeply apologize to the people of Las Cruces, as well as our friends throughout the state of New Mexico, for the pain this has created. The city will review its procedures so a similar incident doesn't happen again. What he forgot to say, it's the flag of the losers. Losers don't get to fly their flags. The captain of the Italian cruise ship Costa Concordia has apologized for the disaster, but said it was a banal accident in which destiny played a role. That's a good apology. Or banal. Country music singer Luke Bryan has apologized for reading the words of the Star-Spangled Banner off his hand, Sarah Palin style, while singing at the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. You still have baseball? He received major criticism for writing the words of the song on his hand.
but he was quick to defend himself. I had a few key words written down to ensure myself I wouldn't mess up. I just wanted to do my best. I promise it was from the heart. And by the heart, he meant, of course, the hand. A Brooklyn prosecutor will keep his job after photographs surfaced online that reportedly show him in a series of offensive poses and costumes, including a Rastafarian getup and blackface. According to a spokesman for the Kings County, that's Brooklyn District Attorney's Office, Justin Maris has apologized for the childish and inappropriate photographs taken and posted approximately 6 years ago while he was in college. And 50 Cent has issued an apology to his nearly 7 million Twitter followers. That's remarkable. After an offensive tweet about autism, he received a lot of backlash after he told an angry fan not to follow him because he looked autistic and, quote, he didn't want no special ed kids on his timeline. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And by the way, 50 Cent has been reduced for this sale to 35 Cent. And finally, from the Inspector General, after years of following the paper trail of $51 billion in U.S. taxpayer dollars provided to rebuild the broken Iraq, the U.S. government can say with certainty that too much was wasted, but it can't say how much. In what it called its final audit report, the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction spelled out a range of accounting weaknesses that put billions of American taxpayer dollars at risk of waste and misappropriation. But it added the precise amount lost to fraud and waste, can never be known. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, a lot of mighties. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through KCRW.com and through iTunes. And it'd be just like knowing how much exactly we wasted in Iraq if you'd agree to join me for that, don't we? Would you? All right, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the almost 65,000 followers. Sounds kind of puny when you think about 50 Cent. At The Harry Shearer. Maybe I'd get more followers if I made cracks about autism. No, I will not. There are lines I will not cross for followers. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise. So long from Santa Monica.